Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Bye.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a chap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
I was told.
People in the stands. I mean, that's just like what's entertainment for me now, you know. I like that Jimmy the Greek moment that happens in sports, you know. Like once every 4 or 5 years, you know that? Like some 50, 55-year-old white dude tries to explain why black people are kicking the shit out of white people in practically every major sport, you know? And it always goes down the same way, right? There's always like three white dudes, and the one white dude in the middle, he's always like the guy with like the theory. You know, he's always like, you know, it seems these African-American athletes, they seem to have this quick twitch muscle fiber. You know, there's a slow twitch, and there's this quick twitch. And the second the dude says that, like the other two white dudes start like sliding out of frame, like, okay, this guy's getting fired. And I'm not going to be part of this highlight. Nice knowing you, Ned. Keep that seat warm, right? And the dude in the middle, he's just like hell-bent on getting fired. You know, he starts like bringing up slavery. And evidently, they're breeding the strongest man with the strongest woman in that quick twitch. And literally, 20 minutes later, that dude's on TV. He's like fired, right? He's crying. His family's standing there. He's got like a box of shit from his desk with like an Emmy sticking out. He's like, I don't know what I said. I was just talking about the quick twitch and the slow twitch. And I wasn't just trying to make a point. No, I love that. I love seeing people mess up their careers like that. It's just funny to me. Plus, I got to admit, as a white dude, on some level, I have to believe in that theory because it's like, are white dudes that bad at basketball? I can't even watch the NBA anymore, man. It's like every highlight, the white dude's like that. The black dude has like his nuts in his face. Fucking slap! I'm just sitting at home like, for the love of God, tackle the guy. Jesus Christ, get out of the way. Do you ever get tired of those two nuts flying over your head? You know you're going to be on SportsCenter. Just get out of the way. Dude, I'm telling you, there's got to be something to that theory. I saw this show one time on Runaway Slaves. It was one of the most amazing programs I've ever seen in my life. Dude, when you ran away as a slave, you just didn't run to the end of the driveway and be like, ah, fuck that job, just start walking down the street. Dude, you had to, like, run through whole states. There's dogs chasing you, you're hurdling shit, you're swimming. Those were the first fucking triathletes. And there was nobody helping him out. There was no dude on the side of the road like, come on, man, two more states, you're in Ohio. Suck it up, you're looking good, looking good. Yeah, dude, you were on your own. Is it any wonder? 250, 300 years of that shit, and then I'm going to D you up in gym class? It ain't happening. I come from hundreds of years of alcoholics. I got like half a liver, you know what I mean? It's just... You know what's funny to me about that stuff? You can't even, like, you know, I obviously know that theory's crazy, but it's just like you can't even bring up how well black people are doing in sports. Everybody gets all weird about it, which I don't understand because it's like a compliment, you know? Like, feel how weird it is right now. You know, I just brought that shit up. I'm saying something good, right? I saw a coach get in trouble for that shit. Like, his team was like 0-6 or something. They just couldn't win, and every week the press was just getting on him more and more and more, right? And the dude, he was just like flustered, and he had like a moment of honesty. They were like, why can't you guys win a game? He's like, oh, you know, oh, the offense isn't getting it done, you know, defense, you know, they're too slow, and they just run out. Tell me, we got to get some more black guys in this team, but I'm telling you, it just doesn't. And immediately, everybody's like, what? Everyone started freaking out like they had no idea what this dude was talking about. It's like, are you watching SportsCenter? Or do you see the Olympics? Like, I love the 100-meter dash, right? There's always like nine black dudes and that one token white guy in, like, lane eight. And I'm just sitting there going, come on, man, one time. Just win the bronze. Just do what you got to do. And the white dude always stays with him until, like, the first turn. Then he, like, fucking blows out his hammy. Those other eight black dudes are like... Where's that white dude the next Olympics? He's, like, up in the broadcast booth. His career's over. He's like a commentator. Yeah, it's going to be a great race. Still can't feel my fucking toes, but I'm telling you. No, I don't get it. It's like a compliment. We're saying you're fast. That's a good thing, right? People start all freaking out. Oh, you're acting like that's all we can do. You're saying we can't be scientists. No, we're not. All we're saying is if there was a race through the microscopes, you fuckers would win. We're just saying that you're fast. You get there first. Your lab coat would be flapping in the wind. I'd get there like 3 minutes later, all cramped up. What are you looking at, bacteria? No, you go first. You just go first. Jesus Christ. There's a Volvo. The guy ran by a Volvo in street shoes. I've never seen that before in my life. No, I get into those arguments all the time. All the time. Friends of mine will be like, well, how come anytime a black athlete does something, they say it's an athletic move? Anytime a white athlete does it, they say it's an intelligent move. And it's like, well, fair enough, man. It just depends on what you're doing. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, if you read a defense, white or black, that's an intelligent move, right? But if you take off from the foul line, jump over nine other dudes, and throw the shit down, those other nine guys aren't standing there like, fuck, why didn't I think of that shit? Here I am dribbling around, guys. I said, that's some superhero shit. You have like a cape flapping in the wind with a big S on your chest. I'm telling you, man, that's the funny thing about Hitler. Just let me finish. Let me work my way through this idea. No, that's my favorite sports clip is that Jesse Owens shit. I just love it because their whole angle was fucked up. He made Hitler leave in like the third quarter, right? He's putting down his number one finger, just fucking walking out of the stadium. Jesus Christ. Their whole thing was like, we are going to create a superior race. It's like, dude, I think we accidentally already did that. Now we sent a select group of people to the gym every day for a couple hundred years. It's paying dividends. They're fucking dunking on us every day. Dude, how quiet was that limo ride home with Hitler? You know what I'm saying? You know he was talking crazy shit when they were on the way there. They were all amped up. We are going to dominate the Heil. Just going off. That whole ride home, they're just sitting there all quiet. You're sitting next to an even angrier than usual Adolf Hitler, trying to make some sort of small talk, like, hey, it is a nice day, isn't it? You know, it's nice food.
Name is going on here.
He tried to rob the payroll, Randolph. He attacked me in broad daylight.
I didn't do nothing, man. This guy bumped into me.
I did not. You knocked me down and tried to grab my briefcase.
Yeah, but it was an accident, man.
An accident? Really?
What's going to happen to this man?
We're going to book him on assault, attempted robbery, and resisting arrest.
Well done, Winthorpe.
Hey, man, I'm innocent. This guy bumped into me. I was trying to give him his briefcase back to him. Shit, I can't be going to jail because I'm asswipe ain't watching where he's going.
Officer, I would like to press full charges. People like this are a menace to decent society.
You're from a broken home, of course.
If we was broke, so what?
You have a history of juvenile arrests, I presume. Drug abuse, reform school, state prisons, and all that.
Yeah, I ain't talking to this guy. I want a lawyer. Is there a lawyer in the house?
That man is a product of a poor environment. There's absolutely nothing wrong with him. I can prove it.
Of course there's something wrong with him. He's a Negro. Probably been stealing since he could crawl.
In the right surroundings and encouragement, I'll bet that that man can run our company as well as your young Woodthorpe. Are we talking about a wager, Randolph? I suppose you think Winthorpe, say if he would lose his job, would resort to holding up people on the streets? No, I don't think just losing his job would be enough for Winthorpe. I think we'd have to heap a little more misfortune on those narrow shoulders. If he lost his job and his home and his fiancée and his friends, if he were somehow disgraced and arrested by the police and thrown in jail even, yes, I'm sure he'd take to crime like a fish to water.
You'd have to put him in the wrong surroundings, of course, with the worst sort of people. I mean real scum, Randolph.
We've done it before. This time it's in a good cause. How much do you want to bet?
The usual amount.
Why not?
Okay, that last clip, or last two clips, was from the movie Trading Places, starring Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy. And it's a pretty good movie. It's a comedy. But the age-old question, what's more powerful, heredity or environment? So in that bet, as you just heard, one person thinks that if you can take a person, any person, and put them in the proper environment, that they, in this case, they were stockbrokers, traders. You can take a person that with a criminal record, bad upbringing, and all that, put them in the right and nurtured environment, and they can become wealthy. Anyway, the movie is an excellent movie. I haven't seen it in a while. I need to watch it again. So, once again, and their wage was $1. Okay. But, so what do you think? That's one of our questions today. What's more powerful, heredity or environment? The other question, before we even get to that, we play a clip of comedian Bill Burr. And Bill Burr, his whole thing was environment versus, actually environment, heredity, where he was talking about, some people might ask the question, well, why are black athletes in the United States at least, and particularly in football and basketball and track, why are they more superior? And he noted that, during the slavery era and Jim Crow and lynching era and all that, that some black people in this country, known as African Americans, they were the first de facto triathletes, because some of them were, particularly through the Underground Railroad, they had to, some were running great distances and had to develop high speeds to stay alive. So that's the that's the heredity part of it. So do you know what's more powerful, heredity or environment? I'm a believer that hands down environment is the is more powerful than heredity. Also with that psychic trauma. Now that goes into what we're going to be talking about today. Today we're going to be Pleasant Stephens will be calling in here shortly. We're going to take a look at a particular runaway slave. This runaway slave we're going to take a look at today is Joseph Papp Taylor. Tedder. Joseph Papp Tedder, T-E-T-T-E-R. Joseph Papp Taylor, Tedder. He and his family were essentially runaway slaves. From North Carolina, they walked. I also understand they had a Conestoga wagon for some of them. But they essentially, they didn't catch the Greyhound or the Megabus. They didn't fly or anything like that. There was no Uber or Lyft. So they walked, and some of them were in a Conestoga wagon. I'm sure they had to carry supplies in that. He had a family of about maybe 13, that's children, and he and his wife, 15. So we're talking about 15 people walking from North Carolina to Illinois. And they founded the town, which still exists today, of Pembroke, Illinois. So what we want to do is we want to take a look on how they did it. How did Papp Tedder, this runaway slave, how did he do it? Because there was no Bank of America. There was no Wells Fargo. They had banks back then, I'm sure, but he didn't use any bank financing. There were no mortgage payments from an institutional lender. There were no government programs. There was no FHA. There was no small business loans. So how was he able to, he and his clan, how were they able to finance and live a sustainable lifestyle? And this, that Pembroke, Illinois, exists today. I was there 2 years ago with Pleasant Stephens and one other person. So we want to take a look at what they did then and then apply those strategies to the resources that we have right now. So we're going to play as an introduction something that to bring Pleasant Stephens in. Pleasant, as you know, was a trucker for many years, and in his travels, he discovered a lot of these towns, some of these black townships. But he lives like near this one. Pembroke's about 70 miles away from Chicago, Illinois. So we'll be back with Pleasant.
In the stands, I mean, that's just like what's entertainment for.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Fidel. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Tennessee, Chicopee, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Devil's Lake, Crater Lake, the Beach Lake. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Louisville, Nashville, Knoxville, Ombabaka, Shepherdville, Jacksonville, Waterville, Coast, Rocka, Pittsfield, Springfield, Bakersfield, Shreveport, Hackensack, Cadillac, Fond du Lac, Davenport, Idaho, Jellicoe, Argentina, Diamantina, Pasadena, Catalina, Sea, Guatemala. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Pittsburgh, Parkersburg, Gravelburg, Colorado, Ellensburg, Rexburg, Vicksburg, Eldorado, Larimore, Atmore, Havistall, Chattanooga, Chaston, Nebraska, Alaska, Opelika, Baraboo, Waterloo, Kalamazoo, Kansas City, Sioux City, Cedar City, Dodge City, what a pity. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been everywhere.
Oh. Now we're bringing on a man who's been everywhere, almost everywhere, Pleasant Stephens. Good morning, Pleasant.
Good morning there, L.A. How you doing? I kind of like that old song, that old boy singing.
Yeah, Johnny Cash, I've been everywhere. That's dedicated to all truckers or people who've been to. That's my personal theme song for you now. But look, yeah, in your travels, you've been a lot of places, but the two places that you turned me on, actually three places, Bolgie, Alabama, which is a black township in Alabama, which we did a joint interview with the retired mayor there about maybe 3-4 years ago, about 4 years ago probably.
About 4 years ago.
Yeah. Now, how did you discover Bolgie?
I made a deliver somewhere near Bolgie.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go to Bolgie to get turned around. And that's the way I discovered Bolgie was had a black mayor.
Okay.
And from there, I looked it up here in Chicago. And I ran onto a guy that grew up with the mayor Bolgie.
Okay.
And he's still alive around here somewhere, I think.
All right, okay.
But I ran into Bolgie by accident.
Okay, all right.
I've been one of the most black boys all my life.
Okay, all right. Now today's podcast is titled Joseph Pap Tedder's Hoppins Park Blueprint. Now, people, let me explain the backstory of this. Yesterday, Pleasant and I was speaking, and what we want to do is he's got a platform, I got a platform. Like I said, Pleasant's on Zoom 3 days a week, mostly in all evening time. He does all Zoom, his things, and we'll give that time. He does them Sunday night. Tuesday night, he's got a call tonight on Zoom, and then he's got one on Friday night. So
yeah.
What we're doing in this public forum today is starting off, what we want to take a look at is we want to take inventory of the resources that we already have, then what we want to do, and then what resources what do we need to do to any missing resources so we can, reach our goals here. Now, the way we're doing this is the reason why I'm bringing up Joseph Papp Tedder, Hopkins Park Blueprint, is because Pleasant was also the one that turned me on to Hopkins Park in Pembroke, Illinois. Those are also black townships. They're over, I think one of them's like 144 years old. All right. So Papp Taylor, Joseph Papp Taylor, was a runaway slave. He and his family walked. Well, I guess they had some horses, too. But there were 13 children. Okay. I don't know if they had a whole bunch of horses or whatever. But they walked. They had a Conestoga wagon to store supplies or whatever. I guess some people were inside of that. But they didn't take no Greyhound or no Megabus or no Amtrak. They didn't fly. None of the modern conveniences of transportation that we have today, they didn't have that then. They didn't have any internet connections. So they went from no smartphones, no tablets, none of that. No, so they went from by foot from North Carolina to Illinois. As a matter of fact, let me map that out. North Carolina. Distance to where we want to go, Hopkins Park, Illinois. Okay. Hopkins Park.
Don't forget Fort Heights.
Yeah. Hold wait a minute. Okay. Distance. All right, 651.42 miles. This is a roundup. 651 miles. That's a long walk. Okay.
It is.
A long walk. So, after they made it here, I mean, made it to the area of Hopkins Park, they they had the resources, I guess they had some money, and we're going to get somebody from Hopkins Park in Pembroke to give us some details, because there's still some family members that still live there. They purchased 40 acres of land, and once again, there was no Bank of America, no FHA, no SBA, none of that. But they subdivided the land and then sold it to others. Now, I'm assuming that's the way they were getting any type of cash that they needed. But they still needed to, you know, eat. So they knew how to forage for food when they got there. They also knew how to grow food. They also knew how to catch food, because there was no Winn-Dixie, Publix, Albertsons, Whole Foods, none of that. No 7-Elevens, none of that back when they were doing this. They had the skill set. They built their own homes, okay, and they made their own clothes. All right. There was no Walmart to go to, no Sears, no Ross's, no Walmart, none of that. So Pembroke, and excuse me, Hopkins Park is still available today. Still standing today. So we want to take some of their, we're going to have to do some of the things that they did then today. Because we have some resources, and we probably have other resources that of course with the internet connections, smartphones, and all that. But we want to bridge that gap so we can go where we're going to go. So Pleasant, I'm gonna turn it over to you now on, you know, what inventory do we have or what do we need to get based on, you know, because if he can do it, Joseph Tedder. We should be able to do it too. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's not hard because what we have failed to do is to follow the footsteps of our ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
The footsteps of our ancestors was they would, well, what do you call that when you trade?
Oh, labor? Bartering.
They did bartering.
Mm-hmm.
We, for whatever reason, we don't do bartering anymore. And that's a bad habit that we have. We're too selfish.
Well, we've allowed, yeah, you're right. We've allowed a couple of things. We've allowed the legal tender of the United States called the dollar bill, United States dollar. We've allowed that to cripple us because of the comfort and the convenience of using it. As, not for instance, they knew, I don't, maybe not, maybe all those, because we're talking about 15 people. So out of the 15 people, we know at least two of them knew how to sew clothes, make clothes from scratch. All right. I've got five sewing machines that my mother left behind. I don't know how to sew. So it's a lot of skill sets that they had that we don't have, well, we could have them today, but we've been, in my opinion, miseducated. But anyway, back to you.
Well, we were miseducated because we took the convenient way out. We
right.
took the dollar bill. Let me give you one simple thing that we do use every day, and we have actually lost that trading ability. It's our telephone. How many of us, and this includes me and everybody else, pretty much. How many of us still can pick up the telephone and call their neighbor today? I would almost be willing to bet you that you can't call your son, your daughter, your girlfriend, your wife, because that has been stripped away from us because we don't use the technology. We don't use the opportunity to harness the opportunity to learn what the phone numbers are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. About a year ago, I started, and I'm still low. I know your number. I know Naima's blog talk number and probably one other person's blog talk number. No, home number. And a friend of mine I went to high school with, but that's about it. I know about five numbers. That's it.
I doubt if I know because I've used the telephone to harness all of the numbers that I call.
Right, I've got over 600 numbers in my phone.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I don't even know. Yeah, I don't know.
Lose the phone.
Right.
You lose the phone. You lose your knowledge.
That's what happened to me.
Now, whose fault is that?
That's
somebody.
That's mine.
Somebody actually took notice to that. And said, let's make the phone to where it would harness the phone numbers. And eventually they'll forget the phone number. We got to get that back. How do we do it? I don't know, but we got to start. Because I can't call my wife and she's in the house with me. Mm. Why can't I call her? Because I don't. When I get ready to call her, I pick up the phone.
Right.
Dial a number on the phone. Call my kids. I had a cousin of mine that died yesterday. He got hit by a car.
Mm-hmm.
Got killed. Yesterday. And I grew up with his mother. And I had to go where? I had to go to my phone to find his mother. When I got the news, I had to go to his, to my phone and get his mother's phone number because I didn't remember it. But when before I left Arkansas, I knew her phone number by heart. Now, that is one of the places that we got to start to rebuild. And how we do it, I hope somebody come up with a good solution as to how we get that done. That's one thing. Here's the other thing that I have, because I have the interest in, I have created a sewing factory.
Mm-hmm.
So a sewing factory is one of the things that our forefathers used when they came to America or wherever they traveled from and to. We still got that know-how to do the framework of creating our clothes.
Yeah, okay. We got
that. Yesterday, because of this is forced now, this was forced on me, because before we used to use our plows to plant our food. Well, I was forced yesterday to buy a tiller. Now, this equipment is changing names as depending on where you live in the country. A tiller that I bought on yesterday. Gas operated. You mash the starter and start it up like you do your car, and you till the ground to where you can plant your seed to grow your food. All right, I got that, but I don't have the mule that we used to plow to till the ground before. The mule got killed before I left Arkansas, because the white people that owned the mule, didn't leave them, and they sold them and cut them up for fertilizer. But we didn't see it coming. It's where we was getting cut up, killed up, and becoming fertilizer. Well, if they kill the mule, what's next? We were the person that was plying the mule. So what's next? So now what are we having happen to us in America today? We got the guns supplying everybody with guns to kill up everybody. What are we going to do about it?
Well,
we have to take the guns out of our kids' hands. There is no 13-year-old young man supposed to have a gun in his hand, because we are not living in the age as to where we go hunting. There's nothing in Chicago to hunt. So why is a 13-year-old have a gun in his hand? Period. Or have access to a gun. Plentiful in Chicago. Plentiful. So we got to make some changes in where we live, how we live, so that we can get about the business of treating our fellow man the way we should and get back to business. But no, we took the easy way out. Go to the store, buy your pistol, buy your any kind of gun that you can hide. Nope. Easy way out is the wrong way out. And now in Chicago, you don't know when you go to the store if you're going to make it back home or not.
Well, that's why a lot of people, well, not a lot of people, but that's why people populate places like Pembroke and Hopkins Park,
That's
because
right.
it's less people there.
Yeah. Now, we got to get back to the business of treating our fellow man like we should, educating our children like we should, and we stop educating our children to let them know what guns are made for.
Now,
guns are made for honey.
Okay. Guns
are made for honey.
Well, and most people that live in an urban environment do not know how to hunt.
No, they don't know how to hunt, and they don't know what to hunt for. They don't know what a rabbit is. They don't know what a rabbit is for, what a rabbit was actually created for. They don't know this. But we got a lot of changing to do. We got a whole country that we have to rebuild so that we can get back to the business of, one, respecting our elders, which we don't do. Our women can go to the store, our ladies can go to the store and won't be afraid of being raped, run over, or whatever the case may be, endangered with what we are doing today. You didn't hear this kind of stuff with this young man who escaped as a slave. What was his name?
Joseph Tedder.
Joseph Tedder. You didn't hear this in Joseph Tedder's lifetime. Never heard of him or any other people that were with him walking 600 miles and killing up came here with it. They all died from hard work. When are we gonna tackle that?
And they had a skill set. They had a skill set then. We're talking about 144 years ago. They had a skill set then that is needed now.
Right.
Because mainstream education, including private schools and Ivy League, put it this way. To live in Pembroke, it'll be wise if you had certain skill sets that if you want to live a sustainable lifestyle. Like, for instance, the reason why I flew up there 2 years ago, like I've said this a few times before, I just flew up there really for a matter of hours. I was up there, maybe about 10 or 12 hours, something like that?
About 10 hours.
Yeah, about 10 hours. Okay.
Yeah.
I was on the tarmac at 9 a.m. I called you from the tarmac as soon as I landed.
Yeah.
Then we got out to Pembroke that afternoon, spent, man, what, 2-3 hours at most?
We spent about 3 hours, 3-4 hours.
Yeah, about 3-4 hours out that way. So now... Now, for instance, Chicago's a nice city, but I don't want to, if I'm going to do something in Chicago proper, I got to deal with more government regulation. And the cost of doing anything is going to be more expensive. Now, we're talking about now. It wasn't when Pleasant first got into Chicago, what we're talking about now today. So that's why Pleasant had already been to, he's been down that way a number of times. I mean, what do you call it? Pembroke's only about
1 hour.
Yeah, about an hour
one
away
hour.
From where you live at. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we went out there and I would say the typical person that lives in Chicago or D.C. or Orlando or Miami, if you don't have certain skills, you're not going to make it in Pembroke, particularly if you want to live off the grid, so to speak. Now, when I say off the grid, meaning you don't need to go to the grocery store or you don't need to buy certain items from the grocery store. Let's put it that way. If you don't want to deal with a light bill, a water bill, you can be off the grid with water out that way, and out there on that, but they've got certain skills there that, you know, because once again, Chicago, New York City, Boston, Massachusetts, Seattle, Washington, Houston, Texas, you know, what you're paying for in those larger cities is the comfort and convenience. Whereas, or you know what, I'd rather have a little less comfort and convenience where I can live more free and get debt-free or start debt-free. That's what you can do in Pembroke and Hopkins Park. And that's what Joseph Tedder did.
Let me back up a word to bring something into this conversation. What kind of lights did they have when this man escaped slavery?
Candles,
or lights to where they had lamp lights.
You know, I don't even think they had lamp lights back then, unless it was maybe kerosene.
Yeah, well, whatever lights.
Oh, right, yeah, kerosene. Or kerosene lamp and candles.
Yeah, yeah.
That was it.
That was.
Yeah,
it.
I'm glad you brought that point up.
When did that come into our communities is to where when nightfall we'd have to go in the house if we wanted to read a book.
Let's see. Let me look. See, light bulb.
I didn't have electric light until in the 50s. Electricity was the way we got our light.
You know what, Dad? Because I was doing studying just last week on the oldest electric company or oldest utility company in the United States is now Baltimore Gas and Light. It originally started off as Baltimore Light, and they didn't have electricity. They were lighting up street lamps. With gas. Well, hold on, let's see. Where is it? I just said history of electricity. But you asked specifically about light bulb. Light bulb invented. All right. When was the first light bulb invented? 1879.
Okay.
Invented it in 1879. They were out there, at least Pembroke, in 1877. But here's the deal. Although that the light bulb was invented by Edison, okay, he had it, but he didn't have a distribution system. It was just invented.
That's right.
That was it. There was no distribution system, and there were no power companies set up to distribute electricity at that time.
Mm-mm. None.
So to answer your question, the light came by candle and maybe kerosene light. That was it.
Kerosene. We call it, in Arkansas, we call it coal oil. and we didn't get electric lights until in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't, I don't say get back to that, because we have another source of electric now that we can use, and
right.
It's called solar energy, and it's free to some to some extent.
Pleasant, I'm glad you bringing this up, because they didn't have, matter of fact, these black pioneers or these towns, many of them former slaves, not all of them, but many of them were former slaves. What they had in common with the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, many of which were wealthy men, they didn't have a light bill to pay.
No.
They didn't have a light bill to pay. One of the things that's keeping people behind today, matter of fact, every day of the week there's an argument between couples, not all couples, but we all know that if somebody can't pay that light bill, there's going to be an argument in that household.
That's right.
If somebody right now lights out, Then I had the money to pay the light bill. So people need to take that into account. But what, like I say, today we still have candles. We still have, you want to do the kerosene lamp, and you can do solar now.
I suggest that we do solar because this time next year, my house will be operated with solar.
Okay.
Because I'm sick and tired of paying these high bills, and we're not getting the service that we're paying for. And it's available to us. Now, these people that came here, walked that 600 miles, they didn't have solar available to them.
Mm-hmm.
But we do. But we're not using it. And we're not taught to use it because
comfort and convenience of the electric company, just flick on the switch and the power's there.
That's right.
But then when that bill comes, because see what? Oh, hold on. We're getting out of winter right now. Well, you got some people right now. It's April. You got some people right now that are on a payment plan that they're going to spend the next 3, 4, maybe 5 months paying off of this past winter's electric bill.
That's right.
And by the time they get that down, winter will be back here again.
Yeah.
So
yes,
the communities that we're setting up here, we're modeling off of Tedder. That's one idea we've taken off of him and the people that signed the Constitution. They didn't have a light bill. So that was one entity that was not in their pockets.
That's right. And we have the privilege today of getting out of debt because we do not have to use banks.
That's a big one.
Because we can use the source that has been left to us. If we use it intelligently so that we as a people do not have to go and give our money away, what money that we earn.
Well, speaking of right, they didn't have the light bill in their pocket. Now, once you mentioned banks, these people built their own homes.
That's right.
Which the average person today in the United States, regardless of race or religion, they don't know how to build their own house. They've gone for the comfort. And the ones who buy a house, they get into a 30-year trap.
Let's go back for a second. I got a granddaughter and her husband. They just bought a house out there near Pembroke, and it's on the side that with the convenience. They just bought a house for, I think that house, they called it, let me get it right. I believe it's 5 bedrooms, which they don't need because all the kids are getting grown and leaving home. And they are paying $2,000 and a few dollars house note. $2,000. I walked through their house and almost got sick.
That's too much for my taste.
I just walked and looked because they invited me. They came and got me because I don't drive anymore.
Right.
I just walked through the house and damn near stumbled. I'm saying, man, is this what we taught our kids to do? They don't need that kind of house. They don't need that kind of convenience. But what? They don't know, that damn house don't sleep but 2 people a night. Well, 3 with the baby.
Mm. You said that's $2,000 a month that they're paying in mortgage payments?
A little over $2,000 a month.
Now, I paid a few years ago $2,000 full for 10 acres of land in Texas.
Yeah.
And all I do is I pay like maybe around not even $100 a year in taxes on that.
That's right.
On 10 acres. Now, mind you, you don't have the conveniences of Chicago, but that's okay for me. That's okay.
I still got the land that I inherited down south. I still got a little over 40 acres down there that I get a check from every month. Because we got it cut up as to where it's part of my income.
Right.
And I'm setting it up with what do you call it? Will and trust. It's to where my kids will inherit an income, but they can't sell it.
All right, that's smart. That's what the royal family does. The Royal Family of England, they can't sell any of the royal Buckingham Palace and all that stuff. They can't sell it.
They can't sell it. Well, my kids will not be able to sell any of my assets. None. If they don't want it, pass it on to the next one. Because it took our ancestors hard labor to create and to leave me an income for what they had created. But I have an addition. I have an addition to leave to my kids, and the addition is manufacturing. They'll be able to make clothes. They don't want to use the sewing machines that we've got to make the clothes. They can put it in the corner and go buy the clothes as for the convenience that's been made for them.
That convenience sends a lot of people to the poorhouse. Because if you look at, you take Walmart, a lot of the clothes that are made in Walmart are made overseas in places like Bangladesh and China, probably Bangladesh more than any other place. So because you have people in those cultures that learn how to sew from an early age.
Well, here's what we have today. El Zora moved from Carolina.
No, she moved from New Jersey.
From New Jersey to Chicago to advance what she already know how to do. And now she's making, she never stopped, but she said she had made quilts to the point to where she didn't have no place to live because the place that she had was too small.
Mm-hmm.
So she moved, and I helped her to buy a house here in Chicago, and now she's starting a sewing class next month. And she will be making quilts, starting to make quilts again, and now she's having a school to teach other young women, men and women, how to make quilts. And what are these things that we wear by our mouth today?
Well, that's, you know, she's doing, you guys are doing what the Amish do, because the Amish, that's one of their profit centers. Not all of them, but a lot of them. They make quilts and other bedding and sell those.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, the same thing that the Tedder family did is what the Amish and Mennonites are doing. It's just simple stuff. It's nothing fancy. You know, you don't need a college degree. We're talking about sewing, making furniture, and selling it. They had the skill sets And that's the same thing that we can do today. You don't need a million people. The Turtle family was about 15 people.
And that's what we are doing today.
That's about it.
We've been doing this now ever since we came. We were saddled with this, what you call this stuff, this sickness that we got.
Pandemic, COVID.
Pandemic. Since we were saddled with this pandemic sickness, that's what we've been doing. And we'll continue to do this so that we can pass this system on to our children.
All right, so essentially, making clothes or making something, because essentially that's what the Tedder, Joseph Tedder's family did. They made things.
Yeah.
They made clothes. They made food. They traded. They bartered.
Yeah.
I guess some things they sold for cash, but they weren't dependent upon cash like we are in today's world.
No. Well, and as I stated, because they wanted to make food, they wanted to do canning. And so just the other day went out and bought, what do you call these big old, these jars that we...
Mason jars. Mm-hmm.
Bought a whole case of those mason jars and said, we're going to do some canning now. So when the stuff that we're raising come off the vine, they're going to can it so that we will have food for the rest of the winter.
All right, that's thinking ahead.
Yeah.
That's thinking ahead.
And then they says, well, now listen to this. I said, well, I'll buy the mule. And that's that tiller.
Heard the tiller you guys were talking about yesterday. Okay.
Yeah. Well, the girl was here when she was coming. She came.
Oh, yeah. Well, right when we were doing a podcast, we interviewed Bridget.
Yeah. So Bridget, I gave her the money. So she went and bought the tiller and brought it back.
Okay.
Now we're set up to do the canning.
Okay.
So that's something that we can expand on. It's just the part of the puzzle.
How many people, because like with Joseph Papp Tedder, the first part of his blueprint was organizing in a community. Now for him, his community was about 15 people, 13 children, he and his wife. That's a community. They just happen to be blood related. Okay, you don't have to have 15 people. It can be 5 people.
We don't have 15 people now that's doing what we're doing.
Okay.
We only have about 5.
All right, 5 with a vested interest.
5 with a vested interest. And I was more than happy to give her the money to go buy this machine because the mule died. The mule was killed, so what has been replaced has been replaced with a machine that do the same thing a mill buster used to do in the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Same machine that we used on the farm, now it's gas operated.
Okay. There's some other potential people out there that can be a part of the community.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
Anybody. We don't turn nobody away. No, we don't turn anybody away.
So, now, just off the top of your head, what resources do you have access to up that way right now? But you already... People are resources. So you got some of the people that you just named and some people that you haven't named. So you got at least 10 people that I know about.
Oh, yeah. Now that we're doing what we're doing with Zoom, people are coming to reality. on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
On a daily basis, people are coming to see how can they fit in.
Now, with the food that you're growing, because your wife's already started growing this stuff some time ago.
Yeah.
You got your location in Chicago, then Alzora's got a physical location where she'll be growing in, Harvey, Illinois? Or wherever she's at.
Yeah, wherever she's at, she's
Okay. Now, you're also looking for, now that's what you already got. Now, you're also looking for a location, Pembroke, Hopkins Park, Four Heights. You're looking for acreages where you can grow more food, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Ford Heights is what we got our eyes peeled back on looking for now.
All right. Now, what other resource, like when you find a piece of property that, you know, an acre or two or 5 acres or 10 acres, whatever it might be, who are some of the other people that you're going to, what skill sets are you looking for or what resource do you need to look, are you looking for beyond what you have right now? Because you're already growing stuff right now anyway.
Well, we're actually looking for anybody that have a skill set to create and to produce anything. It doesn't make any difference if it's come from shoestrings to earrings.
But they got to produce it. Okay.
They got to produce it.
Now, what about, because there's a whole bunch of people that don't know how to grow a tomato.
Yeah.
Or know how to sew or whatever. And people, we already realize there's a whole lot of people addicted to comfort and convenience. People are addicted to comfort and convenience just like they are to crack cocaine. There's really no difference.
Here's what we...
You have people out here that it's...
But here's
go ahead.
That's the reason why we have to they bring them in with a vested interest.
Mm-hmm.
It changes their mindset because they are a part of what we're doing.
Right.
Then we send them to the store to buy what they need to create what they want to build. They have to have two things. They have to be able to build something, make something, or be willing to be taught how to make something.
All right.
And then we can take them from there. Because you know what we found? The few people that has actually buckled down and are willing to be taught how to make something, what they have done, that when they get through making a product, are laughing and giggling and taking it for sale and want to show it off. And that's the reason why we have Loom. Another reason why we have Loom is that we can showcase it right from wherever they're standing.
Right.
We can showcase whatever you have in your house, right wherever you're standing. We didn't have that with that man's escape with slavery.
No. Mm-mm.
And when people see it, they don't even have to come and get it. We'll mail it to them.
Well, that's right, yeah. There was no FedEx or UPS back then.
No, we can mail it. I had a daughter made some jewelry. Granddaughter that made some jewelry the other day, and she has actually sold with Zoom. She had sold, I believe she sold $500 and some worth of jewelry with Zoom day before yesterday, but no, Saturday.
Well, you know, that's another skill set that we're going to have to take advantage of. I did a podcast on live stream selling. That's huge over in China. November the 11th is Singles Day in China, and Singles Day dwarfs Black Friday over here in the United States. And Singles Day basically is not about singles. It's you got people all over the country. You got farmers in remote places that sell out. I mean, just everybody's selling. We'll do another podcast on that, but that's one of the tools. I'm glad you brought that up, Pleasant, because that's the new way people will be selling stuff.
Now let's look at what this girl made this jewelry. This jewelry she made at home.
Mm-hmm.
At home. She hasn't left her house to make this jewelry. But she sold it on Zoom, hasn't left her house. Why? Because we made it available. Grandpa made it available. And she took advantage of it after we showed her how it worked. But we give that was another part of the education that she never had been taught in college. She wasn't taught that in college. She got that from who? Grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's looking to expand her business all over the world.
Well, you can do it if you learn how to live stream sell.
That's right.
The
next time she's on the show, I'm gonna call you and tell you that you can look at how she's selling stuff.
And we're bringing somebody in here that I would call a master salesman, as well as how to set up distribution networks.
Yeah, and your distribution network is all available to you with UPS.
Oh yeah, UPS, FedEx, DHL.
Yeah, you ain't got to invent that.
Or you can set up your own, because that's what what's her name? What's that? Madam C.J. Walker. She had a sales force.
Yeah.
Fuller, S.B. Fuller, he had a sales force.
Yeah, I was a part of that.
Yeah, and they would put out. They would get the product out into the marketplace.
Yeah.
And I guess with Tanner's family, they had a de facto sales force to do what they were doing. Because once again, they learned how to operate without cash. And most people today don't know how to operate without cash.
Well, here's another thing that we have to that we looking into using is this what they call it? Is the thing that you pay for it within minutes?
You talking about Western Union?
No. This thing you can.
Oh, you talking about Cash App?
Cash App.
Oh yeah, that's immediate payment. Yeah.
Immediate payment.
Yeah. Well, Cash App. Facebook. You can pay people through Facebook now. You can receive.
Yeah.
You can send and receive money through Facebook, PayPal, Alpha Pay. Yeah, you're right. Joseph Tedder and all those guys didn't have any of that.
None of that. Uh-uh. And she, you know what she came? She she said, Grandpa, I said, yeah, she's at home, still at home. I just got paid for my jewelry that I sold. That's what great. And she went back to work. Now you think that this child is gonna give that up? No, she's not gonna give that up.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Where is that? What was that? You and I was looking into something in that. I believe it looked like it was out east or someplace.
Out where?
what his family was passing down. It was a family passing down something that they were making.
Oh, man, I forget.
Yeah, it
well,
was
the Amish, you and I. The Amish, they do that.
Yeah, but it was you and I. You found a community of people that had created something for a little town, and they was, I guess, maybe a 200 or 300 of them.
Hmm.
And they was making product and selling it all over the world.
Oh, well, I got that idea from Pianchi. Over in China, they have these villages where, I mean, coffee pots, what you name it, they got little villages over there that, like that, Pianchi made me aware of that. Over here, I guess you would call it factory towns. I don't know if they're as popular as they used to be. But over here now, there are a lot of places where you can set up, you know, you can set up your own little factory district in some of these small towns that are, you know, that need some new people in it.
But you don't have to have a small town now because you have the internet.
Yeah, we do, but, let's see, we got to go to these callers now, but today we're talking about Joseph, and we're going to be doing this quite frequently. We're going to be taking a look at what, and today we'll take a look at Joseph Papp Tedder, runaway slave to town founder, Hopkins Park, Illinois. How did he do it? How did this guy with no college degree, no GED, how did he walked over 651 miles from North Carolina to what is now known today as Hopkins Park, Illinois, along with his kid, he and his wife, 13 kids, he and his wife, 15 people, they walked and founded the town, which still is standing today. Pleasant's been there several times. I've been there once so far. Now, that leads me to the question of the day. There's two questions of the day. Does psychic trauma really exist? Now, if this Joker can go, if he can walk with his family 651 miles, okay, and found his own town in 2021, we don't have any excuses, in my opinion, just my opinion. And the second question of the day is, which is more powerful, heredity or environment? I'm going to play clips from Trading Places and something from comedian Bill Burr on heredity versus environment. Then we'll go to the phones again.
His name is going on here.
He tried to rob the payroll, Randolph. He attacked me in broad daylight.
I didn't do nothing, man. This guy bumped into me.
I did not. You knocked me down and tried to grab my briefcase.
Yeah, but it was an accident, man.
An accident? Really?
What's going to happen to this man?
We're going to book him on assault, attempted robbery, and resisting arrest.
Well done, Winthorpe.
Hey, man, I'm innocent. This guy bumped into me. I was trying to give him his briefcase back to him. Shit, I can't be going to jail because some asswipe ain't watching where he's going.
Officer, I would like to press full charges. People like this are a menace to decent society.
You're from a broken home, of course.
If we was broke, so what?
You have a history of juvenile arrests, I presume. Drug abuse, reform school, state prisons, and all that.
Yeah, I ain't talking to this guy. I want a lawyer. Is there a lawyer in the house?
That man is a product of a poor environment. There's absolutely nothing wrong with him. I can prove it.
Of course there's something wrong with him. He's a Negro. Probably been stealing since he could crawl.
surroundings and encouragement, I'll bet that that man could run our company as well as your young Woodthorpe. Are we talking about a wager, Randolph? I suppose you think Woodthorpe, say if he would lose his job, would resort to holding up people on the streets? No, I don't think just losing his job would be enough for Woodthorpe. I think we'd have to keep a little more misfortune on those narrow shoulders. If he lost his job and his home and his fiancée and his friends, if he were somehow disgraced and arrested by the police and thrown in jail even, yes, I'm sure he'd take to crime like a fish to water.
You'd have to put him in the wrong surroundings, of course, with the worst sort of people. I mean real scum, Randall.
We've done it before. This time it's in a good cause. How much do you want to bet?
The usual amount.
Why not?
People in the stands, I mean, that's just like what's entertainment for me now, you know? I like that Jimmy the Greek moment that happens in sports, you know? Like once every 4 or 5 years, you know that? Like some 50, 55-year-old white dude tries to explain why black people are kicking the shit out of white people in practically every major sport, you know? And it always goes down the same way, right? There's always like three white dudes and the one white dude in the middle, he's always like the guy with like the theory. You know, he's always, you know, it seems these African-American athletes, they seem to have this quick twitch muscle fiber. You know, there's a slow twitch and there's this quick twitch. And the second the dude says that, like the other two white dudes start like sliding out of frame, like, okay, this guy's getting fired and I'm not going to be part of this highlight. Nice knowing you, Ned. Keep that seat warm, right? And the dude in the middle, he's just like hell-bent on getting fired. You know, he starts like bringing up slavery. And evidently, they were breeding the strongest man with the strongest woman and that quick twitch. And literally, 20 minutes later, that dude's on TV. He's like fired, right? He's crying. His family's standing there. He's got like a box of shit from his desk with like an Emmy sticking out. He's like, I don't know what I said. I was just talking about the quick twitch and the slow twitch. And I wasn't just trying to make a point. No, I love that. I love seeing people mess up their careers like that. It's just funny to me. Plus, I gotta admit, as a white dude, on some level, I have to believe in that theory, because it's like, are white dudes that bad at basketball? I can't even watch the NBA anymore, man. It's like every highlight, the white dude's like that, the black dude has like his nuts in his face. Fucking slap! I'm just sitting at home like, for the love of God, tackle the guy. Jesus Christ, get out of the way. Do you ever get tired of those two nuts flying over your head? You know you're going to be on SportsCenter. Just get out of the way. Dude, I'm telling you, there's got to be something to that theory. I saw this show one time on Runaway Slaves. It was one of the most amazing programs I've ever seen in my life. Dude, when you ran away as a slave, you just didn't run to the end of the driveway and be like, ah, fuck that job. Just start walking down the street. Dude, you had to, like, run through whole states. There's dogs chasing you, you're hurdling shit, you're swimming. Those were the first fucking triathletes. And there was nobody helping them out. There was no dude on the side of the road like, come on, man, two more states, you're in Ohio. Suck it up, you're looking good, looking good. Yeah, dude, you are on your own. Is it any wonder? 250, 300 years of that shit, and then I'm going to D you up in gym class? It ain't happening. I come from hundreds of years of alcoholics. I got like half a liver, you know what I mean? It's just... You know what's funny to me about that stuff? You can't even like, you know, I obviously know that theory's crazy, but it's just like, you can't even bring up how well black people are doing in sports. Everybody gets all weird about it, which I don't understand because it's like a compliment, you know? Like, feel how weird it is right now. You know, I just brought that shit up. I'm saying something good, right? I saw a coach get in trouble for that shit. Like, his team was like 0-6 or something. They just couldn't win. And every week the press was just getting on him more and more and more, right? And the dude, he was just like flustered.
Okay, so the questions of the day is just two of them. What's a bigger factor, heredity versus environment? In the case of Joseph Papp Taylor and his family, they walked from North Carolina through parts of Virginia, through Kentucky, into Indiana, across the state of Indiana, and started the town of Hopkins Park, Illinois. 651 miles they walked. He was also a former slave. So, didn't sound like he had any psychic trauma there. But in any event, well, before we go to the phone lines, Pleasant, what's your take? What's more powerful, heredity or environment?
Environment or heredity?
Yeah, in your opinion.
I'm on the other side of the fence because I think environment is more powerful than anything else.
I agree. I agree with you on that. Because what Tedder did was, once again, he was a runaway slave. So he went from one environment where it was illegal for him to do stuff. He and his family risked their lives, okay, to put themselves, first thing, they got into an empowering state of mind. Wherever they started out in North Carolina, because it all starts in your head. And then they made their way to Illinois and founded their own town.
Well, you know.
That town still exists. So, and
right.
You still have people in his bloodline still living.
Yeah,
I look at that as all environment.
Well, see, that's what you call leaving a legacy. He left a legacy for everybody that have any common sense to follow. It's like what we're talking about. We're talking about leaving our legacy for our children to follow. It still exists, and all they got to do is pick it up and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we find his ancestors and show them what we want to develop, I believe they'd be on it like white on rice.
Well, when I was up there 2 years ago, I saw all I needed to see. it's still standing over 100 years.
Yeah.
It's still it. And it's just not, now for people, this is just not Hopkins Park and Pembroke now. You know, there are scores of communities all over the United States, and there's a whole bunch of acres of land available all over the United States for sale. Once you step outside of some major metro areas, anybody on this phone with very little money, to be honest about it, can snap up 100 acres. But the key is, now here's what I learned. Okay, because I had to slow myself down. The key is, all right, you've got the first step is you got to develop a community. That's relationships with people. That's the first step and the most important step that you need to take is forming that community before you spend a penny.
Well,
Who's got your back?
Well, I tell you, maybe I was a little ahead of time, but I took the money that I made when I got to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the first step that I made was I went into business.
Right.
And after going into business, I took and kind of bundled a little money together and opened up and started employing people to show them my earnesty. And then,
when you started your first business, were you married with children by then?
Did I have children?
Yeah, by when you started the first one.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah, here's another thing that mirrors Joseph Papp Tedder. The first community, a lot of people might not look at it, but it really is. The first community, if you're going by the scriptures, is Adam and Eve, just two people.
Yeah.
To pull this stuff off, like I say, my problem is I've got to build up enough offline community. I got to take some of my online and get them offline to do what I need to do offline for community building. But it all starts, like I said, I did things. I got the property before I started the community. Now I got to catch up and I got to develop the community to deal with what we got offline. Now, for my golden eggs, I got golden goose. I got two golden goose here at close range where I'm at in Florida, and I got two households of golden geese in Louisiana, which you know about those before I even had them 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's what's keeping me going. But now I got to get some people for the land that's sitting out there.
Okay. Here's where I suggest that you that.
I'm listening. Pleasant, you there? Oh man, it sounded like his phone went out. Okay, wait a minute. Let me see if I can dial him up.
His name is going on here.
He tried to rob the payroll, Randolph. He attacked me in broad daylight.
I didn't do nothing, man. This guy bumped into me.
I did not. You knocked me down and tried to grab my briefcase.
Yeah, but it was an accident, man.
An accident? Really?
What's going to happen to this man?
We're going to book him. An assault, attempted robbery, and resisting arrest.
Well done, Winthorpe.
Hey, man, I'm innocent. This guy bumped into me. I was trying to give him his briefcase back to him. Shit, I can't be going to jail because some asswipe ain't watching where he's going.
Officer, I would like to press full charges. People like this are a menace to decent society.
You're from a broken home, of course.
If we was broke, so what?
You have a history of juvenile arrests, I presume. Drug abuse, reform schools, state prisons, and all that.
Yeah, I ain't talking to this guy. I want a lawyer. Is there a lawyer in the house?
That man is a product of a poor environment. There's absolutely nothing wrong with him. I can prove it.
Of course there's something wrong with him. He's a Negro. Probably been stealing since he could crawl.
The right surroundings and encouragement, I'll bet that man could run our company as well as your young Woodthorpe. Are we talking about a wager, Randolph? I suppose you think Winthorpe, say if he were to lose his job, would resort to holding up people on the streets? No, I don't think just losing his job would be enough for Winthorpe. I think we'd have to keep a little more misfortune on those narrow shoulders. If he lost his job and his home and his fiancée and his friends, if he were somehow disgraced and arrested by the police and thrown in jail even, yes, I'm sure he'd take to crime like a fish to water.
You'd have to put him in the wrong surroundings, of course, with the worst sort of people. I mean real scum, Randall.
We've done it before. This time it's in a good cause. How much do you want to bet?
The usual amount.
Why not?
And that was from the movie Trading Places. Their bid was on Heredity versus Environment when it came to Dan Aykroyd and his character in Eddie Murphy. Excellent movie on. I'm a big thing on Environment. And Pleasant was on Environment as well. Pleasant's phone apparently went dead because I tried to call him on my other phone and it just kept on ringing and ringing and ringing. And he was on the same line I'm on right now, which is a landline. So with that in mind, let me go to the phone lines. And at least we had them for at least an hour today. Okay, 314, your mic is open.
That was a good conversation you had, Ellie.
Oh, glad you enjoyed it.
I sent you some demographics and census information on those two towns, Pembroke and
Harpins Park.
Yeah. L.A., you don't want to live there.
I didn't say I was going to live. Oh, but the reason why I brought up Pembroke, well, at Hopkins Park, which is, they're right next to each other. The reason why I brought it up today, the primary reason was that, okay, if this former slave, runaway slave, whatever he was, okay, if he can go out and do something, no excuses, and you know, most of these people back then were Republicans, okay.
You know what they are now, don't you?
Well,
Democrats.
Many of them
Pembroke,
are.
Pembroke, Hopkins Park.
Park. Today in 2021, today they're Democrats.
Hopkins Park, Illinois. I wouldn't mind living there. Well, let's see. It's 4% white, 92% black.
Mm-hmm.
The per capita income is $8,800. And 42.2% of the population lives below the poverty line.
Right.
Pembroke. They don't know what's in Pembroke. They say the population is less than 2,072.
I believe when I was there, man, I was down there for like about 4 hours. Me plus and then one other person and farmland for as far as the eye can see.
Pembroke population.
I saw a library.
2000.
I saw a library. Then they had I'm listening.
In 2009, February 11 to be exact. The federal government cut funding to the tiny village due to misappropriation of funds. The entire police force was fired. Two of the three schools was closed. Half of the working age adults are unemployed. Pembroke doesn't have any natural gas.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of people that do work there probably drive to Chicago daily.
Well, it ain't no lot of people to speak of when you're talking about less than 2,000. Jesse Jackson was begging to get natural gas into the town from Nucor. But the thing is that they ain't going to run natural gas line out to that town for two reasons. One, it's too costly. Two, who you going to sell it to? The people out there, you got 80% of the people unemployed. I wonder what Jesse Jackson, what the hell he be thinking about?
I don't know. Isn't he kind of in semi-retirement now?
He's half dead, I think.
You don't hear much about him these days.
Now, I tell you what, Boyers, Alabama, in 2000, the racial makeup was 94% white, 46.7% of the household was married, the per capita income was about $18,000.
But what part of Alabama? That's not Bulgy, Alabama, though.
I thought you said Boaz.
How do you spell it, the one you're talking about?
B-O-A-Z, Bozy. Yeah,
oh, no,
Bozy.
No, that's Bozy. No, we were talking about Bulgy.
Well, anyway, in this town, you only got 16 people that's living below the poverty line. So that would be the better place to move, I would think. I'd check Bulgy out.
Yeah, there's a lot of places in the United States to live.
You talking about people marching. I'm saying it's the hereditary.
Now, why is that?
So you trying to make a reference of how far people marched.
I guess you
white settlers
were
doing the same thing.
That's
because they walked from the East Coast down to what's today Texas.
Mm-hmm.
To settle
Texas. Long march.
Not only that, you had white soldiers that marched from the East Coast, places like New York and New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia, and they were dragging cannons to go and participate in the Mexican-American War. So the marching ain't that big of a deal, but let's take in Africa and show you that the slaves was used to that stuff. Because you had an interior slave market in Ghana. You had 15 and you had 27 on the coast. In one city near Burkina Faso, down to Accra, and if I'm not mistaken, the city is Wa, W-A. And from Wa to Accra, where you had the coastal slave market, that distance is like 700 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have been used to marching, walking.
That's
matter
true.
Of fact, all those markets, in order for them to get from Hausa land, from San Sami, I'm talking about way northern, they walked.
That's true.
And that's what I'm telling you. Whites did not go into.
White folks. You're right. Including white folks.
Whites didn't go into Africa in them countries.
People walking from Florida to California, it's been done.
Yeah. Over there in Ghana. There ain't nobody that go into no interior land for what? People would bring them what they didn't want down to them and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
It's simple as that. But these other things you're talking about doing, if that's what people want to do, go ahead and do it. I don't think blacks from the cities could do it because you had some survival shows, and you could look at some of them on YouTube. They went to Alaska, the group.
That's a rough place there.
Yeah, it was during the summer. In
okay,
that country.
Still rough. Because if you don't
and
have
they
to,
had,
even in, yeah, you got to have the survival skills to do Alaska. Once you step outside of Fairbanks and Anchorage.
Mm-hmm. They had along the route to where they were supposed to end up.
Mm-hmm.
They had cabins where they could seek shelter and get food.
Right.
And they had...
Hello?
Benford,
hello.
Philadelphia. I'm not sure.
Okay,
huh?
Okay, all right. No. I couldn't hear you for a moment.
Yeah, I believe he might have been from Philadelphia. I'm not sure.
Okay.
And then they gave people walkie-talkies. Radio so they could contact the base where the helicopter could come get them if they felt like they couldn't stand it anymore. And I think it was two white women and two white males. I'm not sure what the makeup was, but it had white women in it also. The black man from the city, he called the helicopter the second day to come get him.
He didn't have the skill set.
I ain't lying. No, it's on.
No, I believe
it's
once
on YouTube.
Again, I believe it because, like I said, the skill set that you need to be in Alaska. Once you get outside of the urbanized areas, Alaska can be rough.
Yeah, and this wasn't with snow on the ground like it normally is. This was in the spring, because
like
spring
you said,
don't last.
Spring and summertime. But if you don't know how to hike, how to, you know, the terrain, they got animals out there that he probably never saw before. You know, he probably didn't know how to make his own shelter. He didn't have a basic skill set.
And, you know, every now and then I like to look at those. I used to take kids camping.
Well, I love it.
There's a star basketball player that go to Cardinal Ritter. Trey Burton, I used to take his father camping when he was a kid. And his father, his uncle, Mark, his father, Luther, his cousin, Kenny, his other cousin, Terrence. I used to take them camping. And they loved it. They liked it. They enjoyed it. They didn't want to stay there, but they enjoyed it.
Right.
We used to go to Trail of the Tears Park, Elephant Rocks, and, you know, many others. Carlisle Lake. and it was fun for them. But the, like you say, and I think that you should take kids out and get them away from
definitely get them
the
get them out
area.
Of the city. Yeah, and get them a new experience, and some of that stuff they, I'm sure they'll enjoy. And then you know, expose them to the different types of camping, because you can have that glam camping where you do have those comforts and conveniences, but then you can do that roughed camping where, okay, how do you make a tent, pitch it, you know.
Yeah, I gave them their
like
all, I bought them all their own tents and all this stuff. They enjoy cooking the food. But
yeah,
yeah,
cooking food out there on the campfire. How to make a fire.
Anyway, I think it's a hereditary. The hereditary pay a lot to it, your makeup. You know, blacks in America got a percentage of Neanderthal DNA. Did you know that?
Never.
Whereas those in Africa, it's not present. When you go into areas where there's less contact, where people would have interbred. So DNA sequences tell a lot about the makeup, about the history of a particular human being. And you would be very surprised. They've taken some blacks and done DNA sequencing on, and they would have thought that from whichever particular line, I think in this one case, this guy's father. His father, DNA took them up around the Anglo-Saxons.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe his mother's DNA, the matriarchal lineage of their DNA, might have went over to the coastal areas there in Africa.
Okay.
But, you know, white's DNA also has African presence in it too. That's because humanoids came from there. Now, like the Neanderthal, their remains have not been found in the continent of Africa. Most of them been found there, especially in one cave. I think it's Denison, but I'm not sure, in Germany. But it's very interesting to talk on those aspects.
Right. All right. Well, don't know what we'll do tomorrow, but what's tomorrow? Today's Tuesday, right? Man, it's midweek tomorrow already.
Yeah, time travels very fast.
Very fast. Very fast.
But why
all
don't
right, well,
you
thanks for,
go ahead and, why don't you
well,
go
I'm,
ahead
I'm
and wrap
it up,
little,
man. It's 12:34. It's quitting time.
Yeah, build your cabin on one of them land spots you got.
Well, yeah,
you may have gas and oil on your property in Texas.
That's the aspect that we're going to talk about, because security. Because I don't want to put buildings up there and there's nobody there. Because if you leave something empty, where I got some of this stuff, you know, you come back, it'll be vandalized. So I got to figure out. Okay, I'm gonna need somebody to be a what's the I want not homesteader but groundskeeper or something, some title like that. I'm gonna need somebody that's going to actually live there full time. And then I don't that's tomorrow. We'll probably go through that security. On that note, Pianki, thanks for calling. Thanks, everybody, for listening in. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.